Hello everyone, and welcome back to a fourth, believe it or not, episode of Camera Creations, our lovely jubbly podcast in which we talk about cameras, photography, gear, technique, just about anything to do with taking images. I'm joined by Chris Clayton and Ian Bundy and Joe Hickey. Hello gentlemen, how are you doing everyone?
Evening Ted, very well, how's everyone else?
Very good, even in this heat, but yeah. I can't complain.
Yeah, I'm melting a little bit.
Yeah, I think in the UK where we're recording, it's very hot today, and the further south you are, the worse it is. Fortunately, I'm in North Wales, so I've probably got the best deal here, but I'm still too hot. As I say, we're on show four. It's right in the middle of August, and it's the 14th, in fact. And we're going to be talking to you about all that stuff I just mentioned. Don't forget that whatever works is where the show is hosted for now. We may change that in time if this thing takes off. But yeah, the website is officially whateverworks.works, where you'll find links to all the stuff we've been talking about on the show tonight and the previous shows, and watch out for that website. MeWe is where we talk to each other. MeWe, we have a camera creations group, and we try to get encourage people that are interested in photography and cameras to join that. We ban cameras in phones, so none allowed. No, there's other places for that. This is all about proper cameras. And so, yes, well, let's get going, shall we? Just to mention, there is a camera creation shared Google album for photos that we're going to be discussing on the show. On the last show, we didn't quite know where to put them, and we ended up putting them in the MeWe group and people uploading them there. But I did start a shared folder. Now, the only problem with that is that it's public, and if people have got EXIF data in their photographs, or are concerned that someone might just nick them, I suppose, it is a public link, and I don't know what people think about that. Chris?
There's not much you can do. I mean, if people want to take it, they will, so I'm not too worried.
Okay. Ian?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. A lot of the copyright data is in the file anyway, so from my perspective, it's all good.
Okay, and Joe?
There's zero chance anyone would want to steal my photos, so I'm confident.
Yes. All right, okay, so just to mention also that Chris Kelly has dropped out of the running for this show. So we're now down to four people, the four of us here today. I did feel sorry for Chris. He was very ambitious to try and join in. I can't believe that someone has got such a busy life. He can't have 5 minutes to himself. It's a real shame. But anyway, that's fine. Four is a good number. And if we knew we'd end up with four at the outset, we'd have been very happy, I think. So yes, a brief catch up on the last fortnight since our last show. I'm continuing to deliberate over hardware, of course, and if we have time, I'll come to that a bit later. I see that in the show notes we've got a packed out news section, and actually that's really good because we can talk about the news and stuff that's popped up in our feeds and talk about the gear that's coming along. Anyone else got anything to catch up?
Nothing particularly pressing. I did take the opportunity to follow up on the challenge we set ourselves last week by getting out and trying to get some architectural bridge photographs.
Oh, so yeah.
I got a couple which we put into the group, but I'm not sure if we're going to discuss that later on or we'll be doing that at the beginning.
I'm sure we'll find time for that, yeah.
I did get out at least one day the last couple of weeks.
Well done. Anyone else?
I did get out to Ashridge. I took my camera out for once. I got a terrible picture of a bridge, which I won't be sharing. Not only is it a terrible picture, it's a really terrible bridge as well, which is not worth sharing anyway. So even if I did get a good one. But it was good to get out. I realised I need to get out with my camera a lot more.
Right. Ian?
Pretty much epic failure from my side. Even though I live on the East Coast, Lowestoft, and we have this brand new gull wing bridge, and I've got the embarrassment that I just couldn't get out to to get a shot of that. I did include a couple of shots that I've taken over the years for bridges.
Yeah.
But also came to terms, as I was saying to Chris just a bit earlier, that of my complete inability to take photographs of going out with the family with my full-frame Z8 Nikon to take some pictures of grandkids and alpacas, and just it was so big, bulky, in the way, complete failure, yeah. And it's sort of back to the drawing board for me, I think. So.
Sure, and that kind of brings us to one of our news stories, which is that I think Chris was the person that probably posted this. I could be wrong, it might be someone else, but it was the excitement surrounding the possibility of a new Ricoh compact, which would have been with you when you were trying to take photographs. Was that Chris? Was that you posted that, or was it someone else?
It wasn't me.
No?
It was me, actually.
Oh, okay.
It prompted me to my trials and tribulations of trying to get that pocket camera, because I've 100% come to terms with the Z8 camera is so much bigger, the Nikon is so much bigger than the Sony, and it's so intrusive that it wouldn't be any good for me going out and doing streets or anything. So I've gone through the iterations, and I think it was Chris that mentioned the Ricoh GR3 yeah. that was out, and hearing some noise about the GR4 and the fact that it's so pocketable, I think the only concern is that it was just seemed to be the same as the last version, but I'm not sure if that's a bad thing or not. So
well, right. The issue is, I mean, I had the GR3X, which is 40mm equivalent. GR3 is
28,
I believe. 28.
Okay.
There is no 40mm equivalent on the GR4 as yet, so you're kind of stuck with the 28 on the new model. I would still rather go for the 3X and get the 40mm, personally, mm-hmm. for street. It's closer to 35. I think 28 is too wide. And it's the same focal length as phones, so you might as well just use your phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the APS-C in terms of sensor size then on this GR4 by the looks of it, a 1/4000th of a second maximum shutter speed, micro SD card slot, a USB-C port for charging and presumably data exchange, and they reckon the battery should last about 250 shots. It is dinky. I can remember, I don't know, about 10 years ago, I had a Ricoh GR, I don't know, 2 probably, and I really, really liked it. It was so solidly made. It was beautifully made. But the reason that I got fed up with it was because it didn't have any kind of viewfinder. In the end, I bought a viewfinder. The Ricoh make a viewfinder just for the GR series, as I'm sure you probably know. And I put that on, but it was just made it all kind of bulky and a bit, you know. And then I discovered Fujifilm, the X100 series, and I kind of never looked back to Ricoh again. But they're very, very dinky little devices, aren't they?
Tiny, yeah. Smaller than my iPhone.
Yeah, yeah.
What did you think of it, Chris? Would you recommend, or...?
It's difficult to know, because it was the first camera I bought once I decided to buy a camera. I thought I'm going to get the Ricoh because it was like the progression from getting a phone. But I only had it for about 3 weeks and I returned it because I felt like it didn't really feel like a camera. It just felt like a phone with a button on it. I wanted a camera, if that makes sense.
That's an interesting point that Ted made about the viewfinder, because for me, I like to have a viewfinder.
Yeah.
And not everyone does make it more like a phone in a way, doesn't it?
Exactly,
yeah, the experience to me felt very similar. I mean, the picture quality was miles better than any phone, especially at that time.
Yeah.
But I wanted to engage with a camera and sort of get a new experience, which it would have been for me at the time. So I went into Fuji. After that, I returned the Ricoh and got a Fuji.
That's exactly what I did. When you look through the hybrid optical digital viewfinder of the X100 series, which I think they introduced on the S or the T, I had the F for Freddy. It's just such a delight to use. It's just so interesting and wonderful, and it's big as well. I've got glasses, and one of the problems that I have with viewfinders is that which is why I used to go for Nikon high eye point viewfinders, is they just don't work with glasses. Viewfinders tend to be fiddly and tedious, and I don't know, anyone else's thoughts on that?
I always take my glasses off to use the viewfinder, I've got to confess.
Right.
If I'm doing proper shooting, I would definitely go around without my glasses and be blind, but be able to take the shots and see it through the viewfinder. But...
yes. And the trouble with me is that these diopter correction wheel thingy bobs, they're completely pointless, because my prescription is so complicated with astigmatisms and stuff that I can kind of get it quite close without, but it just doesn't really work. And so I end up with glasses, which is why I kept going back to Nikon, which seemed to cater for that really well. But yeah, I did like the GR. I think it's a great little camera. Dread to think how much it's going to cost. They tend to be, the three series tend to be about £1,000 now, mm-hmm. or thereabouts. They keep bringing out new versions of it, like the Passport and the Traveller and the, there's a whole bunch of them now, isn't there, Chris?
Yeah, there's a Diary edition, which is probably
Diary,
my favourite skin that they do, but it's just skins, isn't it? It's just the same camera. They've been milking it for a long time.
Yeah.
It's about time they had a new one.
One is £100 more. But the
yes,
if the design... The, we're linking to an article here in mpb.com, and if the design of it is anything to be gone by, then... It looks like it's going to be the same again, but I don't know. Anyway, we'll see. That was one of the news stories. Let's go back up to the top of the news stories, Chris. Now, and I'm very nearly confident that the first two are yours. So, unless I'm wrong again, take it away.
No, definitely mine. Well, the first two are, well, it's Lauer, I think they're Chinese lens maker, and Sigma.
Yep.
They're an old Japanese one, but they're both coming out at pretty much the same time with a 200mm f2 full-frame lens, which is kind of unprecedented in the middle of mirrorless era. Ian, can you think of any that have come out in the last few years?
No, and again, it's probably by lack of knowledge, but the difference between, I guess the impact of bokeh between f2 and f2.8, is that a massive amount, because it looks like a massive beast of a lens. So,
well, it's certainly a massive amount in terms of how big this lens is going to be.
Yeah.
I don't know in real terms how much difference it would be in terms of bokeh and letting light in, but these lenses are enormous. So the Lauer one is 1.6 kilograms, the Sigma one rumored to be 1.85 kilograms. These are big lenses, and I'm not sure what the use case is for an f2 portraits. Maybe a bit long for portraits, but for sports, Ian, what do you think?
Yeah.
F2?
I guess you would get some nice compression with it, I would imagine. I had the good fortune to use the Nikon 400mm 2.8 with the built-in teleconverter.
Oh, wow.
And I wish I hadn't used it, but I got to borrow it at a couple of the Grand Prix from Nikon. And that is, you could tell it is a 13 grand lens, and it's way too good for me, I think, but you can definitely notice the quality on that. But I'll stick with my 70 to 200, I think.
Yeah,
2.8, and
I can see someone,
I'd love to have a go.
I can see someone sitting with the I'm looking at the Sigma one, and I can see someone sitting on the goal line, just along from the goal, pointing into the penalty spot, and getting some, you know, and a nighttime football match, so needing all that light gathering. And I can see 200 mils, that would be just about right for the penalty spot place. Yeah,
yeah.
Joe, you're a football fan. What do you reckon?
Yeah, you do see them on the side with this sort of lens, don't you? So I think it'd be perfect. I like the look of that Iowa one. It's a bit different looking, isn't it, with the grey finish and the blue. I know it's not what you buy a lens for, but it looks quite smart, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I love it, yeah. I love seeing them sort of
quite
trying
unique.
Something new with a lens design, definitely.
I've never heard of that firm, Lauer.
Lauer, yeah, they've been bringing out quite a few kind of interesting lenses. They do a 9mm full frame. Which I'm quite interested in. It's been hovering in my basket for the last few months. It's a massive ultra wide. I think you could have a lot of fun with that. But they do a lot of interesting lenses. And this one looks... Yeah, looks like it'd be fun to use. I'm just not sure I'd have much of a use case for it myself.
Have we got any idea of price on these?
No, there's no price mentioned. But, right. I mean, it's not going to be cheap.
I guess
I think the Sigma's probably going to be about $2,000.
Most people will be renting them, probably, I guess, for... purposes that I just described.
But
for me that would be a great street lens, which we'll come to a bit later, in terms of my experience from back in the day. DJI Mini Pro 5 is the next one.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much drone enthusiasm there is in the group. I'm a recent convert to drone photography.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been using my DJI Flip a fair bit, which has the same exact camera as the Mini Pro 4, which is why I chose to buy that drone. But the Mini Pro 5, rumoured to be coming out in the next 2 weeks, keeping the very important sub-250-gram weight, which is vital for certain laws and restrictions, which allow you to fly quite liberally. But with a one-inch sensor, which is huge, that's going to make a massive difference, nearly double the size. And,
is that compared to the 4, Chris?
Yeah. So the 4 is just using an old phone sensor, as it stands. This one-inch sensor, I mean, that's a big upgrade.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I will be monitoring the announcement with great interest, but the price is going to be a concern. It's not going to be cheaper, is it, than the last one?
Nothing seems to be, does it? It's got and it's only got 36 minutes of battery. How does that compare with
other ones?
Good.
That's
is
good.
It? Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, mine's about 22, I think. And it's never as long as they say.
Right, no. Yeah. Of course it wouldn't
depends
be.
On wind and... No.
But I do find I've got the Neo, and I think I got it for a special from Argos. I think it was about £115. And for something that is so small that can go in your camera bag and just get a different shot if you're out on a shoot was epic. I don't know if I would go through the whole thing of getting a more professional version. I don't know if that would suit what I do because I don't choose it enough. But to have that with you in such a small form factor, it's been a bit of a game changer for me because it makes me just put it in the camera bag. So
yeah, the Flip's very similar for me. It's very resilient. You can fold it up quickly and get it out and fly it from your hand and land in your hand. So I've flown it in town centres without an issue. The Pro Series, they're the same size, but there's more unfolding involved. So it's they can draw attention. So we'll see. But I'm expecting a price north of £1,000 on this.
What do you use it for, though, people that use these? I see sometimes, I think it's Mike Warner that puts up some footage of some roads he's having built near him. Then we had Steve using one, Steve Litchfield, for, demonstrating walking around a park mainly. And I think he probably got fed up with the whole thing quite soon. But what do you use it for, the pair of you?
For me, solely photography. I treat it as another lens. That's how I look at it.
Oh, I see. And not for video.
Never taken a second of video on the drone or my camera.
Right.
Just photography.
I think I'd have to agree with you on that. For me, when on holiday and to get a shot of a lighthouse and again, just not being intrusive. I remember having one of the original DJIs and taking it on holiday and everyone could hear it and it made you so conspicuous, but for this little thing to pop up and get that ultra wide pano shot that you wouldn't have been able to get, I think it's for me it's that's what I would use it for, but I'm less for the again any kind of video. I think
do you use the controller or do you use your phone here?
So I used the phone. I did have the DJI, I think it was the 3, with the controller with the screen built in, which was really, really good. But again, I found it was just sitting, it was such a faff to get out.
Yeah.
I wasn't using it, whereas this little thing, And again, it's USB-C, so I don't have an extra battery or anything, so I will just throw it up there, get a shot, and then I'm good. So I think it's got about 15 minutes of battery, but with just plugging it in and landing on your hand is really great, because again, you don't have those fears of using it in public because it's so small.
Yeah, I'm excited by it, but we'll see. We're still on the price.
Okay, there's a couple of stories.
I will look for yours on the forums then, Chris. So
when it comes out. I don't know if I'll get much.
There's a couple of stories that are passing through here. One of them is about five new affordable large format cameras, which I meant to read more closely before we recorded, but I forgot all about it. I'm not quite sure what these are about. I've never actually used a large format camera myself. The closest I got, I suppose, is square format with the kind of the Yashica, and that kind of traditionally a wedding photographer kind of outfit. But large format, 6x7 and 8x10 and bigger stuff like that. I'm not really sure quite what this is about, if it's digital or if it's film. Did anyone else have time to read this, or shall we?
I had a quick look. It's film.
It's film.
Film.
Okay.
They do have one of the bodies is one of those like X-Pan ultra-wide panorama kind of ratio cameras, which I really like the look of. I love the pictures that they produce, although I suppose you could do the same just with a crop.
Just looking at that now, I like the X-Pan as well myself.
Apparently it's a
really good...
Go on, Ian.
There's some really good videos. I don't know if anyone follows Thomas Heaton on YouTube. He's, a super popular landscape photographer, and he does some of the videos he's done using those with film. Is pretty good. So if there's any interest there, I would definitely follow him. Again, it's quite entertaining as well. So
right. Okay, I'll try and find a link for that and put it in the recording notes. So that's good. There's a story about Kodak. Apparently, there's a question about their future. The press were all over this financial report that seemed to be suggesting strongly that they were on their way out, and that the Kodak name was going to go down the toilet. But actually, Kodak have denied this, and they've come back with a counter media article, press release, saying that no, that's not true at all. We are working our way through our financial difficulties, and we have a plan going forward. So there is that as well. And there was one last story, which was about a 64 megapixel point-and-shoot Rolly camera, which was doing the rounds on Yanko, and it looks like it's probably a thing. 64 megapixel compact, looks like it's actually been funded in Kickstarter, and it looks like it. At first I thought, no, it can't be a Rolly, surely. What is Rolly these days anyway? But I don't know if anyone else had a chance to have a look at this one. It looks like it's beautifully made, if it's real.
Yeah, it does look beautifully made, definitely. I've never heard of it.
There's a few of these little point-and-shoots. They just use mobile phone sensors, though, don't they? Mm-hmm. I think the advantage is you do get a proper bit of glass in front of it with an optical zoom.
Mm.
So that's obviously going to be a benefit.
And a selfie.
one pointing back. Yeah.
The selfie
you always
on the
know
back.
When it's a budget type of device when they have like 5K or 4K written on them.
Yeah, well, 64 megapixels is a giveaway as well, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's €299 in Europe, apparently.
Yeah, it probably can't be taken very seriously, can it? They've somehow got the Rolly name on it, though, so I guess they've done a deal with a... I don't know, is Rolly still a thing? Do they still make stuff? Are they still in existence? I suppose they must be.
Just sell their name. Once you start seeing them on televisions in Asda, you know that they've lost the plot by Tyler.
Right, okay. Anything else in the news? Anyone else?
No, I think we're good.
No, okay. Well, good to go then. So the next section, I thought that we, one of the things that came up was, for me personally, was that people were taking the mick out of me because I am shying away from buying a camera because my tick list is so long that I'm never going to find one, basically. And I thought I would just run through the essential and desirable lists of the camera that I would be prepared to buy. And first one, I'll just run it through it quickly. First one is that it should be Nikon, really, because, well, for one reason, I'm so used to Nikon over the years, and secondly, I've already got a half-decent Nikon full-frame lens. Brings me to the second one. It needs to be full-frame, only really because I can't get my head around apertures unless it is. And we've discussed that before, and I just find it, with 35mm, I know where I am, it's full frame, I know what aperture means, I know what to expect and so forth. So on the same theme, I want an aperture ring around my lens that comes with it, and that's a handling thing. That's a, yeah, to some degree it's nostalgia, but it's also workflow, but it's more about handling. I'm so used to my left hand being able to twiddle the aperture ring and shooting an aperture priority, and it just works beautifully. I want matrix metering, I want spot metering, I want an auto-exposure lock button, I want a top plate LCD, yes. I know it's not critical because there's a backplate LCD, but I just like the nostalgia, the historic implication of having the plate on the top. I don't want an articulating back on the screen on the back of the camera. I just don't like them. It adds bulk, it adds weight, and it adds complications. And when I've used a camera that's got one, I've never used the articulating screen. It was always just flat against the back. That's not what I want to do with a camera. I want, as I said earlier, a high eye point optical viewfinder with regards to glasses wearing. I want a centre to the lens tripod socket, which is not always taken, and I've got £500 to spend, so there's my there's the kicker, really, which moves me very squarely into second-hand territory, of course. Now, my desirable list is USB-C charging, which I know I'm not going to get with a phone of the age that I'm going to end up with under £500. I want it to have a decent battery life. I used to use a screw thread shutter release cable, and I would like that as well. If I was going to get back into photography, I might well want to use that for some of the projects I used to do. A depth of field preview button, I don't know if that's still a thing. I've no idea if any cameras have that anymore, but I used to like using mine. I do want a built-in flash as well. I know that that's very old hat now, and people are not using flash and they're using ambient light or whatever, but I remember back to the first time that I used Nikon fill flash and second curtain sync and all that lovely stuff that Nikon did with their flash guns and the built-in flash. I was just wowed with that. And of course I'd like a hot shoe for if I want to put another flash on, or a slave or something else. So there's my essential list, and I think that the wise money was on probably a second hand Nikon D610, or you know, that kind of territory, or possibly an 850, a D 850 or 750. Anyway, any thoughts, anyone?
I'm just asking Gemini.
Oh, right.
She can find a camera with all them.
Does it even exist?
I think it's certainly...
If you were going to up your budget a little bit, I mean, if you just moved it up slightly, you could get the ZF from Nikon, which is full frame. It probably... I guess this...
It wouldn't work, would it?
Oh, no.
That already has. Yeah. Are you tied down to Nikon just because of the lens? It might be worth...
Yeah.
only setting that lens, and or is it just because you do want Nikon?
Well, I'm used to Nikon. I always had Nikon, and I feel at home with Nikon. But I don't have to. It could be Canon. One of the things that I do like about Canon, I used to have a D40 or D30 or something, and I used to love that great big wheel on the back. That was really cool in terms of handling and adjusting things. The Nikons never had that, and I was really jealous, so I got a D40 or something like that. And I love that big wheel. Has anyone else played with that?
No, I've never held a Canon.
Me neither.
I guess that you would be advocating Sony, wouldn't you?
Well, mirrorless, though. And I think you'd probably need to add another zero to your budget.
Yes.
So Gemini has come back with a camera.
Okay.
The D700.
So the D700, the D700 and the D710, were they both full frame? But the 610 is pretty much the same, I think, and the 750. The 750 is probably the most likely target in amongst all that. The 850.
So how much is that?
The 750, you can get one for about £450, and the 850 hikes it up to like over £600. So that could happen. But also, you see, I want a lens. This is the trouble. I've got my Nikon lens, but it's a 28-105, which is fine. It's a nice lens, and it's not particularly fast, but it's a kit lens, and it's all right. I could certainly start with that. But what I really want is that 105 millimeter Sigma, the f/2.8 or 2.5, whatever it is,
the macro
and I think I'd have a lot of fun with that, and so I'd need at some point to budget that. You see, this is why I'm hesitating, is because what I really want is just going to push it over my limit for money, and so I'm kind of just not doing anything. But anyway, I just thought I would list out my list formally on the show, so people can see how silly I am and why I'm not jumping and making a decision. Because next week
it's not much to lose, though, Ted. I mean, the second-hand market, you know, is going to keep its value, isn't it? So
yeah.
Oh, you mean
get a second-hand one, and you probably sell it for what you bought it for the most part.
I don't want to sell it again, though. I want to get one that I want to use.
I guess MPB is your friend. You could get one under 400 there, and as I say, I've used those kind of things. I think someone mentioned talking about hiring. I did speak to, I was in Wex and talking about hiring a lens, and they're so cost prohibitive. It's easier to get one from MPB and pop it back, but there seems to be an awful lot of these 750s available. As Chris said, you probably wouldn't lose much on it. I mean, you can get one right down to £339. So.
Yeah, but I think that's approaching it in the wrong way. I'm not looking to sell it back. I'm looking to buy one that I want to use and to actually start taking photographs. So the resale value is not the issue. The issue is the getting set up value or cost and so forth. But yeah, the 750 is probably a decent target. So I shall have a look into that even further. There's the other part of it is that if I was able to just not go with full frame, then there's 4/3, which I know we spoke about on the show before. And it's a kind of viable argument, really. I know you don't get the same quality, but it's a very sensible argument, and there's some nice hardware that you can get with 4/3, so maybe I need to consider that as well again.
And the glass is a lot lighter.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is nice, and a lot cheaper.
It is, but I don't think I think that sensor's too small to make it worthwhile getting a proper camera system for. I think you want to be going APS-C at least. Personally.
Okay.
I mean, a Fuji X-T2, X-T3, that's got to be pretty cheap second-hand.
Mm-hmm. I did like my Fuji gear. I had an X-T4 or something, I can't remember now, back in the day, and I did like that. It's just that I was always just bugged because it wasn't full frame.
I was the same. I moved to Sony because of that.
Yeah. So I think I need to stick with the program for full frame. And I do, like you, Ian mentioned Wex there, and I have dealt with Wex before, and I think that I would have confidence in buying from them. But the other ones I've never dealt with, so I don't know.
There's another good... I recommend Park cameras. They're very good.
Park and Horsham. Yeah.
Yeah,
I used to go in there. I used to drive from Chichester just to go to Park cameras and go and look at all their second-hand stuff.
They're about 20 seconds away from where I work.
Right, okay.
That's dangerous for you then.
Dangerous.
Yeah, I did go and buy a Tamron 35 to 150 just out of impulse.
Wow.
Which was a bad move in hindsight.
I used to love going to camera shops back in the day, and I would just spend on a Saturday, I would just go to a city centre somewhere where I knew that there was half a dozen good second-hand camera shops, and I would just go between them and mill around. I was so transfixed with all the wonderful hardware out there. I really wish I could get that back. Someone inject me.
You can fall in love with things that you can't afford, though, which is...
Yeah, I know. Anyway, let's move on. Enough of me. Centre stage and limelight gone away. Chris, we were talking last show about the possibility of bringing the theme of bridges to this show. I know that it's a bit of a tall order. But you, I think, have done probably more than most of us, and you've got some photographs to share here. Do you want to tell us all about it, lead us through?
Yeah, so I did make an effort. I thought I didn't want to be the only one that turns up with no photos.
Well done.
So that's how I'm the only one that has turned up with a photo. But yeah, I thought I would go back to Balcombe Viaduct. I think Ouse Valley Viaduct is the correct name on Google Maps. I took a photo there a few years back, but I thought I'd go back and see if I can improve. And unfortunately, they've fenced off most of the area around it now, so there's only one footpath. It gives you one composition, which is the one that you'll be able to see in the Google Photos group. I did try and make it more interesting, so I've got some shrubbery and some flowers in the foreground and the viaducts in the background, trying to sort of
why have they fenced it off?
I don't know. There's signs everywhere, Ted. I think maybe they got fed up with Instagrammers or people hanging around. I don't know.
It's not that it's falling apart, is it?
No, because they've just renovated it. So,
okay.
I mean, you could climb over the fence, I suppose, and get about, but I didn't want to get into trouble. So.
I like the I like the height of which you've included the foreground greenery. So it would have been tempting to just not have that large amount on the left-hand side there, taking up most of the height of the frame, and leaving the left-hand side to the trees and fields in the background. But actually, I think that worked really nicely.
I did put quite a lot of work sort of traipsing around, trying to balance the image. I'm trying to get something on the left, something on the right, and I'm using the grass or the wildflowers there to kind of frame the bridge. Because every time I go somewhere, I try and think, what's the photo that everyone else is going to take, and I'm going to try and get something different.
Yeah.
And there's only so much you can do, but I think I have got something different, because most people would just go as far forward as they can and just get the bridge. So I've tried to sort of surround it.
Gives you a sense of the time of year, though, doesn't it, with the wildflowers in there?
Yeah, it was about 8 in the morning, so a couple of hours after sunset. Very harsh conditions, no clouds, so I couldn't really do much. Normally I try and do like a long exposure, get some cloud movement, but no chance of that. So this is all I could muster. But I was happy enough with it.
Very
not
nice.
Amazing, but it was okay.
I quite like
and
the
text. And it's focus stacked as well.
Sorry?
It's focus stacked as well, so that's three photos you can see on that image.
Yep.
Oh, really? So okay.
Yeah, so the foreground's in focus and the bridge is in focus all the way to the back.
Mm. I like
you couldn't do with one.
I like the textures as well on the bridge itself, and the colours and the shading. I think that all of that works. There's a hint of sunshine, a hint of glow going through from the left-hand side of the frame, and that particularly picks out the nice colours, I think, and the textures.
Yeah, the sun was very harsh on the left there, but it did sort of give the warmth to the bridge, so I did add a little bit of warmth in the edit to sort of make it a little bit sort of contrast. So I've got the orange of the field and the bridge, and then you've got the green and the blue either side. So, yeah, it's okay.
It's nice, yeah.
But I've got out there at least.
Is the second photograph, the black and white one, the same location and the same viaduct?
Yeah, so that's right underneath the viaduct, and you're looking through all the... I don't know what you would call it, but all the stanchions, they've got rings in them, and then they're all called perfectly symmetrical right down the middle, and that's the classic. Again, that's the classic Instagram shot. Yeah. Yeah, I had to wait for a bunch of Instagram girls to leave the frame. But again, I've looked at it and thought, well, everyone's got the standard shot, so I've gone for like a minimal abstract black and white on there, make it a little bit more interesting, and I was quite pleased with the edit. Looks nothing like the original.
But, should have got the Insta girls in there as well. That would have been an interesting shot, maybe.
I have got pictures of them in it, so maybe I'll send that to you in DMs, Joe.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
A bit like your shot from Tokyo, was it? For the Far East somewhere, where you were taking... We spoke about it before. People taking pictures of other people taking pictures.
Yes, yeah. Oh, you make me miss Tokyo now.
Was that Tokyo? The third one is a bit more of a kind of classic city scene. What's that one about?
This is, when you said bridge photos, this was probably my favourite one I've taken. This was with my drone, the DJI Flip. This was in January, February this year. This was at sunset, right in the middle of the city of London. So it was a bit nervous flying a drone there. You are legally allowed, but probably most people think you wouldn't be, but you are. I've checked the app, and you can fly up to Tower Bridge there. That's the line. That's the cut-off. So after that, you can't fly, but this side you can. So this is... I'm just really happy with the shot. This is actually three photos. I did a manual HDR because the drone sensor is quite limited, dynamic range, so I've taken... three or four images, I think it was three, for exposing for the highlights and the shadows, and then merged them manually in post. And I'm just really happy. I'm happy with the shard on the left, the city on the right, and the bridge in the middle. I think it's got a really nice balance.
Yeah. That's really epic.
Yeah, I was really happy with it. I love the edit I've done. I've got a black and orange edit, which I'm really pleased with. So it's a keeper photo. And it's still on my wallpaper on my laptop.
Go on, Ted.
One of the things that I really like about it is the water in the foreground, and as it approaches just under the bridge there, the clarity and the texture of the water that's rippling around, and you can see that very clearly. That was the first thing I kind of noticed, I think.
That's edited.
Right. Oh, okay.
Yeah, behind the curtain. Yeah, so I selected the water. I did a mask for the water, and I reduced the clarity so that wasn't so sharp, because... the drone sensor is like a phone where it tends to over sharpen.
One of these shows will go into some of your post processing stuff, Chris, and we'll have a kind of masterclass and a deep dive on what you do in all of that. We won't do it until we have a special show. But
don't get me started. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's fine. We'll do that. Joe, sorry, I interrupted you.
That's what I was going to say. I really love the warm and cool tones mixed. I love edits like that. And the warm tones pulled through the water. It's really good edit.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate that, Joe. Yeah, thanks a lot, mate. It was. It probably took 3 hours or so to do that edit. So
wow,
it was a lot of work, but I enjoy it. That's why I do it. I really enjoy it.
Cool.
But you can sort of get a bit carried away, but I'm really happy with that. So that's my favourite.
Very nice
photo.
Has anyone bought it yet?
Yes, I've sold one of those.
Great. Yeah. Cool. Very good. Okay, thank you, Chris. Ian, no, you're the second person to have complied with the task.
I did cheat a little bit. Just maybe one question, Chris. Back to the viaduct. You said there was sort of lots of signs up saying no drones.
Yeah.
I don't know if that is that strictly true there? Because I know
it's not true. So Balcombe Estate, I did a bit of research into this. Balcombe Estate owned the land around the viaduct, and they must have been fed up with drone flyers, because there's probably about 40 signs that say no drones, and you are 100% are allowed to fly drones there without any legal issues. But the trouble is, it's a busy area, and you're going to have loads of people that all they see is no drones, and then you're flying a drone, so you're going to get...
Let you go super early in the morning or something like that.
Yeah, I went early, but not early enough, obviously. Because obviously the shot you want is the one with the train going over, which are every 15 minutes, so you're going to have to be there a good 10, 15 minutes in the air. So you can fly drones, but just expect someone to challenge you. But I felt disappointed that I didn't get the drone up. I think I will try and go back and get a drone shot.
And that's not far from you, is it? It's, I was just looking on the map because I've seen it so many times online and just wondered where it was. So.
Yeah, it's just north of me, and just past Hayward's Heath. Yeah, it's about 25 minutes away from me.
Very good. Yeah,
it's a good location.
Okay. So that's one of the fears I'd have with drones, is people always seem to challenge you.
They do.
If they don't know what's going on.
In this country, they do. Mm. That London photo, while I was taking that picture, I had three security guards around me telling me to land my drone.
That really frustrate me.
Yeah, it does get a bit much. A valid concern, Joe.
Okay, Ian, take us away through your couple or three examples, or four examples.
I can't. Once I start, I can't stop. But I didn't manage to get out to get a shot because I wanted to get something that I wanted to do rather than going out and just taking a picture. So I included a couple of shots, really just maybe first one is one of the bridges. When I first started photography, I first got my camera, I went on a photo walk with the Royal Photographic Society, mm-hmm. and this was along South Bank, and I think it only cost about 50 quid for one evening, and about 8 photographers and a guide. I find them really useful because, again, they give you advice, especially if someone learning. So this was first one was one of the bridges. I like the sort of the neon, almost a sort of starburst sort of thing. But it was just one of those things for me, just starting out, to get a picture like that, I was pretty happy with. It obviously darkened the sky a lot more than it was to get rid of that. But ultimately, the colour was the same colour as it was, really. And it was a long exposure on there. But it was just more around the story, the background of it. And as I say, any opportunity to get to London, I think if you can do a day trip to London, there's so much scope to get photographs, I think it's well worth it.
Mm-hmm. Very good. I like the second one thing I like about that photograph is that you have not been afraid to include loads of blackness, as you just described. Whereas if you crop that, so it's just above the line of the elements in the frame, it will be a very, very different feel to it. It's like it gives it a much more spacious and dark and nighttime feel by leaving it all in. So I appreciate that, and the colours are lovely, and the starbursts are great as well. That takes me right back to when I used to use my starburst filters on film cameras, and you only got one shot, so you had a filter.
I did get some walking along. I did got a quite a good black and white one at Tower Bridge, that with the starburst and things like that. Mm-hmm. But it was just a good learning experience to be shooting with other people. That it was more of the getting out, and back to the thing is always just about getting out, getting an excuse, getting a reason to go out and shoot. And if you could do it without the family, it works so much better because you have a bit more time. So
yeah, get rid of the family. Good idea. What's the next one?
next one is Westminster Bridge. So this was last year. There was a guy on Instagram called Mike. He's MK Catchard. He does a lot of city stuff, and I met up with him for a couple of hours and shot in London. Again, around Westminster Bridge, got the classic shot of Big Ben, but I quite like this one, and I put a filter on it, and it came out quite well. I did get some. I was super happy with the shots I got, but I was taking one of the things. He was shooting Sony, which was a lot smaller. I was shooting my Z8, and again, that brings up. It's so big compared to the Sony's, but again, more around recommending if you can get out and shoot with people. Looking back on it today, to some of the pictures, I'm like, oh, I quite enjoyed that, and I enjoyed the experience of taking the shot. So,
mm-hmm. Very good.
And a similar sort of one. This was Blackfriars Bridge. This was the first time I went out with. The Royal Photography Society, and this was a long exposure of one of the river boats going through. I was putting it in for my licensure. It did get reviewed, and the guy didn't like it. He said there was something off with the underneath the with the boat going through, with the lights under there, and he said something's not right there. So, okay, that's fair enough. But I quite liked it. It may not have been perfect, but again, I enjoyed the experience of getting a long exposure and with Chris playing around with the edit and doing something a little bit different with the edit. So.
Was that a boat going
through? I really
like
that image.
Yeah? Was that a boat going through, or is that all a fabrication?
No, that was a boat. So it was a long exposure. The boats that the shuttle boats that go through along the Thames, mm-hmm. It's a great opportunity to get those. I have done some of those. I think the classic ones are the Westminster Bridge of the London buses going across, and you can get the nice red streaks across there. But mm-hmm. I was quite happy with that, especially early on as well in the journey of taking photos. It's always. Starting off at zero and liken it to golf, you go out and get some really good shots, and then next time you go out, it's all atrocious and nothing works, and then it happens again, and you get that one shot and you're happy.
Sorry, Chris, I interrupted you.
I was just going to say, I really like the long exposure. I love long exposures anyway, but I love the clean lines on the boat coming through. I think it balances the images really nicely. The other colours, I think it works really well.
Mm. That's what I was going to say. The colours, the boat colours and the colours on the line at the top are exactly the same almost, isn't it? Yeah, I like that as well.
Yeah.
Very nice.
It was a fun experience, and as I say, it was more for me for learning. And as I say, I was very new to manual settings anyway, so being able to use that and put an ND filter on to get the long exposure worked quite well. So
very good.
And the final one, a classic shot that is, every time I look at it, it's a little bit out. It's one of the Golden Gate Bridge. I was away with work last year, and I had the opportunity. I was going to San Fran. I wanted to get out with a camera, so I met up with a guy. He met me at my hotel at 5:30 in the morning, and we drove around for 3 hours before I went to work to get some shots. So he took me to all the sort of photo spots and stuff like that, and I was quite happy with some of those. And I think this is one of the classic ones. I wish I was a little bit to the right,
yeah.
I could have got the second stanchion in. But it's one of those things when it comes back onto the computer, you go, oh. Can AI fix that? I don't think it can, but it was again a fun experience anyway. So
you go on, Chris.
I was just going to say, I was looking at that second stanchion. It's the first thing I see, but that's just me being really picky. So
exactly.
I really don't want to be mean. It's a great image. AI can definitely fix that. So yeah, if you keep on those YouTube tutorials, and you'll have it fixed.
So I think probably quite. Difficult sometimes to take a photograph of a really famous landmark or something that, as we said earlier, you know, has been photographed a million and one times, and that those images are just so widely available online that you can just find them And then to try and find something, as you say, you're driving around for 3 hours and you eventually find a different angle, which you hope no one's kind of done before, but they probably have. Do you find that is a big problem with going, you know, like, for example, if you went to the Eiffel Tower, Chris Kelly, who we were talking about earlier, he went to Paris recently, and he was trying to take an interestingly different photograph of the Eiffel Tower, for example, and he stuck his head in the frame and pointed the camera from the ground up into the middle of the, and it was just different. Again, it's probably taken a million times before, but his face in it made it different. Any thoughts on that?
I think for me it's your take on it. And where it comes alive is what you can do with the edit, because the pictures, definitely the one with the Golden Gate was very different to what I saw and what I shot. And I think being able to have your artistic take on something, even if it is a classic shot, I think for me it adds my take on it compared to somebody else's.
Mm-hmm.
I would hate to do the carbon copy, exactly the same edit and stuff of someone else's. I'd like to have something slightly different.
Sure. Very nice indeed.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. That's why I'm so heavily into the post-processing side of it, because that's where it becomes your image. And for very famous spots, like you'll see in the photos group in our folder, the Millennium Bridge photo I've got, where I've done the mirror and the reflection, that was obviously long exposure, it's been mirrored. I started doing things like that just because I wanted my images to stand out against kind of what everyone else was doing at the same locations.
Yep.
So that was for the same. That's not the reason why I got so heavy into the editing, just to make it, you know, different than everyone else.
Yeah. I wonder if maybe on the next show, I don't know what you think, Chris, perhaps we could have that kind of deep dive on editing, and perhaps you could take one photo or two photos and tell us what you've done to it and how you've done it. Do you think that there's mileage in that?
Possibly. I'm not sure how well it would be, how it would go over sort of on audio only.
But yeah.
I mean, I could happily talk about it for hours, so that wouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, okay. It's
something I really enjoy sort of discussing and doing. Sure.
Okay, we'll have a think about that and decide what to do. Joe, you took as many photographs of bridges as me, I reckon.
Yeah, I'm just looking on my Lightroom, though. There's like, I have taken a few bridge photos I wish I'd shared now.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was with the Retropia lens, which is like an old disposable camera lens for my full-frame camera. And it's quite an interesting one, actually. I should have shared it. Too late now.
Oh, well, never mind. Perhaps next time.
Next time bridges come around.
Yes. I chucked one of mine in there just as a joke, or a placeholder really, which I took in November 2005 on a Casio EX-Z40 compact camera. It's a 0.2 megapixel sensor and 480 by 360 of a viaduct in, I don't know where it was. I honestly can't remember where it was. I think it might be in Wales somewhere. It was on holiday when I was going away in the motorhome at the time. But that was the only bridge photo I could find. And I had some taken with a phone, but those are banned, as we know. Anyway, there we have it. So, anything else anyone wants to talk about before we wrap it up for this show?
We're going to set a challenge for next week.
Do you want to do that?
2 weeks' time.
Do you want to do that? If so, someone needs to think of something quick, don't they?
Yeah, we should have thought of this.
I was thinking, especially when we're coming to, I guess, the flavour of adding our mark on things, what I've seen work quite well before is someone sharing an image or taking one of your images or sharing one with a group, and we could all have a go, even if it's with Snapseed or Lightroom or what have you, to do an edit onto it. If you've got your raw file, and it could be, again, different people's interpretation. It'll save us if we can't get out or Ted hasn't bought the camera by in the next 2 weeks. We can work on the same image or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that.
I'm up for that. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah.
So somebody needs to put forward an image that we can all take away and work on.
Okay.
Who's going to do that? Let's have a volunteer. Someone to provide an image that needs to be worked on. Not Chris, because... Because Chris, you'll have already done it anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Ian, have you got something that we can
do? I promise it won't be car related. I'll have a landscape or something like that.
Just a flat raw
file. Maybe I'll put up three or something like that, and we can all, which one takes your fancy, and put it through Snapseed or Lightroom or something very expressive like Photoshop. With Chris,
yeah,
so it'll be interesting to see if any of us crop it or
So if you could make that photograph available for us, Ian, before too long, we'll have plenty of time to have a look at it in the next fortnight. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another show, hopefully. Don't forget that this show is hosted at Whatever Works, and the website for that is whateverworks.works. But don't try and find Camera Creations in your podcatcher, because you'll find it under Whatever Works. So search for that and you'll find it there. TedSalmon.com is where you'll find me, and all the stuff that I do, audio podcasts and MeWe groups, are all linked out to there, as they are at PodHub UK as well. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining me. It's been a blast, and we'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another show. So goodbye for now.
Bye.
Goodbye.